everyone, it's AK. So on my Twitter page, which is again AK17033, I talked about how today is my governor's press briefing. He does a daily press briefing, just like President Trump, which apparently is up in the air at this point. Don't know if he's going to keep doing that. Anyway, so my governor's press briefing today, I had to, of course, talk about it. So one of the things that they did today was talked about the unemployment claims and the number of SNAP benefits and TANF benefits, the number of applications up by 200% or whatever, because it's an epidemic / pandemic, and it's a big deal, and people are losing their jobs and that kind of stuff. And they also talked about how they would give people SNAP benefits, which is food stamps for those who are old school, the benefits to people who have lost their jobs or can't work and have children. So what this is a great thing. What they're doing is they're not saying you have to be low income to get the SNAP benefits. You have to not be able to work and you get SNAP benefits, because, you know, there's some kids that rely on schools for breakfast and lunches, or, you know, parents are having a hard time with income trying to buy food for their families. So I thought that was a good thing. So right after they said this man, now I talked about last week how he had a crystal ball or something. And so this week he actually had candy from some type of shop. They donated candy or whatever. So he's passing the candy out on the table. It was turtles or whatever. And I'm kind of scratching my head, did they not just give this presentation about how people are starving and can't feed their kids, and you have the audacity to put turtles and candy on the table? Again, people might not feel the same way, but I was just kind of flabbergasted. Now, it would have been different if they hadn't had the discussion about the hunger issue. It would be totally different if they hadn't just had that whole conversation about how people are needing help feeding their families, and then he puts out candy and passes it around. Whatever. Anyway, so one thing that I actually did today, I know I've done it before, is I actually wrote down bullet points of what to talk about, because I do have a tendency to rant and ramble, which it's part of what makes me and what makes this channel me. So one thing that I don't really do a lot is I don't really listen to myself. I hate hearing my voice because I have a lisp, and you can tell, especially when I'm talking about something I'm excited about, or I'm talking really fast and it just comes out, and I can feel it, and then, you know, hear it when I'm listening to myself. So I try not to listen to myself for that reason. Now, most of you guys probably don't care that I have a lisp. You're like, what? You have one? Okay, cool, whatever. But it's just something that, you know, I've had my whole life. And it's annoying. It can be very annoying at times. Oh, by the way, a lisp is, most of the time, it's something that has to do with the tongue placement in your mouth. So it's nothing to do with, you know, something you're doing wrong or, you know, trying to be funny as a kid. So it's literally the tongue placement in your mouth. There's different kinds of lisps. I didn't really look too hard about which kind I have, but I just know that I have one. And for me, my problem is with S's. See, I feel it right there. The letter S, I don't have a problem with TH usually, but it's usually S. So again, I don't listen to myself talk. So hopefully I make sense and you guys can understand me when I'm talking. Okay, so back to my bullet point. So I talked about the first point, which was the candy issue. And one thing that happened, I'm not surprised that this happened, but basically he has journalists call in and they ask questions in real time. And, you know, the people watching the briefing can hear the questions and, you know, answers. So somebody talked about how in Terre Haute, which is a city west of the Illinois border, kind of down south-ish, how apparently they had people that were doing fake tests, like coronavirus tests. It was they had a tent or something, and they were charging people $75 per test. And then apparently it was found out and they got shut down. And the people in Terre Haute were like, we only have one legit, you know, area for testing from the FDA, and it's certainly not in a tent. These people aren't affiliated with the FDA. And I think the people said that they were doctors in Crawfordsville or some kind of foolishness, but I'm like, really? And so of course people were paying them money to get tested because people are scared. And it's like, okay, so were the tests real? You know, what was the issue? What's gonna happen with that? I don't know. The person that asked the question wanted to know what the governor was doing about it, how he was gonna address it. And of course he gave some generic type of answer. But I had no idea that that happened. But again, I'm not surprised. And it's kind of like the people who went to the store and bought out all the toilet paper, all the hand sanitizer, and are trying to sell it on eBay and Amazon for hundreds of dollars. So it's kind of, I guess, like the equivalent of that. So I felt really bad for the people that that happened to. All right, next point. Look at me, I'm on it. So this has been a discussion in many states around the country about people releasing nonviolent offenders or offenders who are close to finishing their time. Now, I know some states have done it. I'm not really sure off the top of my head which ones, but I have heard and read about some states that are actually doing this. So one of the journalists' questions was, does the coronavirus outbreak have to do with his views on releasing offenders, or, you know, how does he feel about that? He gave a very short answer. It was no. And then he turned it over to the one that's in charge of the Department of Corrections, and so he gave his whole thing. But I thought that was interesting that he finally had an answer that was a straight yes or no. So basically, Indiana is not going to be releasing offenders, whether they be nonviolent or close to finishing their sentence. Indiana's not doing that. So in case you heard differently, I'm telling you right now, this is right after the governor's briefing. He said himself no. The Department of Corrections talked about, even if we did release them, where are they going to go? Because if you're being released before your sentence is over, so you have an early release, you don't probably have, you know, arrangements set up. Not only that, but what if you have the virus and you pass it on to the people that you end up staying with? And he made a good point. You know, if we release them, where are they going to go? How are they going to, you know, they can't work. Mainly because, I mean, people still don't want convicted felons to work for them, but also the fact that, you know, people, millions of people are losing their jobs. So basically, he didn't say this, but in so many words, it kind of seemed like, you know, the best place for them to be at this point is still in jail. So I thought that was a really good question from the reporter. And again, I did appreciate the governor's flat out no as an answer. Didn't elaborate, just said no. So that was a good thing. Next point. So one of the reasons why people watch the briefings every single day for your governor and for the president is because they want to hear news. They want to hear updates. You know, how's the testing going? What about deaths? You know, all these different things. And for governors, the people want to hear about, you know, the stay at home orders. When is the state going to get up and running? Which businesses, etc. So today, basically, he kept saying, oh, we'll address this May 1. We'll address this on Friday. We're going to talk about our plans on Friday. And my thing is, so today is Monday. So you mean to tell me you choose to wait until Friday to answer any of those questions? Now, I do understand that he is still consulting people and they're still making decisions together. But him saying that makes it seem like he knows nothing. And the really interesting part is that his stay-at-home order is supposed to end May 1st. So you mean to tell me that you're going to wait until the day the order expires to tell us what's next? So I thought that was very interesting that he kept saying that. And that was the issue people had the last time, that he was waiting so long and we're like, hey, your order is about to expire. What's going on? And I think he actually ended up telling us, it was a couple days before he actually did it, a couple days before it expired. So I'm not sure if he'll do that this week. If he were to, it would be on Thursday or Wednesday, but I don't know. So I thought that was, you know, kind of like, okay, so why are we watching your briefings? Like, you know, we know people are dying. We know people are getting the virus. We know people are sick. You know, we know about testing. It's like whenever you watch the briefing, it's so much depressing stuff. And it's like, okay, so in light of this depression, can you tell me something good? Can you answer my questions? Can you, you know, and watching that, we're not really getting it. I don't know. Again, I mean, I'm not the governor, you know, I don't make these decisions, but, and I really feel like I should watch other governors, because I was reading on Facebook and on Twitter about other people and how their governors were handling the situation, and how they were being really transparent with the people and not giving I don't knows, or I'm gonna wait, or, you know, dancing around the question. So I kind of want to watch other governors. And I saw that from Indiana, people in southern Indiana, basically the way Indiana's set up, people in northern Indiana are part of Illinois/Chicago. People in southern Indiana are part of Kentucky/Louisville. So a lot of them get their news from Kentucky, and a lot of people up north get theirs from Illinois. So the people down south were saying how, you know, they get their news from the governor of Kentucky, and he's doing all these great things, and it's good for people in Kentucky, but not them, because they don't live there. So they were saying how those different, the different governors, even of Ohio, you know, surrounding states, surrounding Indiana, they're doing things differently. So I kind of feel like, well, maybe I should, you know, watch those governors and see how it's supposed to be done. I think I might do that. One thing that I was reading about, I have my family, my parents are originally from Chicago. My dad now lives in New Mexico. He's retired military, so he moved there. Part of my family, my extended family, lives in Texas. Part of them lives in, I think it's Kansas or somewhere. And then my immediate family is here in Indiana. So we're kind of spread out at this point. But so they do still live in Indiana, some of them. And they were saying how the Illinois governor extended the stay-at-home order until May 31st. I'm not sure if that's right. I haven't looked at it myself. I just saw their Facebook post. I like to think they wouldn't lie about it, or, you know, spread fake news. So people were saying that him extending his order to May 31st, you know, are the surrounding states going to do the same thing? Because Indiana, Illinois, Kentucky, Ohio, Michigan, we're kind of working together in the sense of we're surrounding each other. So we kind of have the same demographics, the same stuff going on. So that was something that was asked too about the governor. And of course, you know, we'll talk about it Monday. We haven't decided. I'm not sure, you know, whatever. So I think that Illinois extending theirs till May 31st is, you know, it's kind of interesting. And then I did read somewhere, I'm not sure which state, but I think it was somebody that extended theirs to June 1st or June something. And I wonder how people make these decisions like that far in advance. One thing I do appreciate about our governor is that he only does it 2 weeks at a time. So it's like doing it, you know, a month or two in advance. What if stuff isn't like this in a month or two and people have made preparations for the state continuing to be closed until then? So it's kind of like, you know, what do we do? So I do appreciate that. Thank you, Governor Holcomb, for doing two weeks at a time. So June 1st or the middle of June or whatever, I do think that's a little, you know, too far ahead. But I mean, depending on where you live, the cases are getting worse. More people are dying. So maybe that's it. I mean, it'd be different if you lived in Wyoming, where barely anybody lives there, first of all. But, you know, cases are going down, less people are dying, or, you know, non-existent type of stuff. It'd be different to, you know, okay, yeah, we're going to go ahead and do this. We're going to open it right now. Now, there are some states, especially in the South. Georgia is the one that the president called out their governor about it. And so some states in the South are opening their economies, opening up their states. But my issue with that is there are also states that are, especially Georgia, states that are, their cases are increasing and the death rates are increasing. So why would you open your state? I mean, it'd be different again if the numbers were low. That's what it's supposed to be for the first step of the plan to reopen America. The first step is supposed to be a low number of cases for like 14 days straight. So how are you justifying opening up your state and expecting people to go back to normal when people are dying? They're still dying. They're still getting sick. I mean, I understand, like I've said before, I totally understand. I get it from the economic standpoint. People are losing their jobs. They can't feed their families. I understand that. But from the safety health aspect, you know, so he's opening up the state. People go back to work. People get sick and more die. So I don't know. And I know that I think all of the states that are reopening, they're using some type of system. They're not just going, you know, everybody go back to normal, everybody open up. They're using, you know, industries one at a time, or different types of, you know, businesses. If they're small businesses, if they're medium, you know, they're doing it in steps, which is also good. And I kind of feel like they could be guinea pigs too, because depending on which businesses you open up first, if you see an increase of cases and death, it's like, oh, no, we got to shut it back down. So, I mean, I would hope that would happen. So, I mean, I'm not really sure what's going on with some of those states, but I do know that they're opening up and the process of opening up. But Indiana, apparently we won't know anything until May 1st when the governor decides to tell us. Indiana-wise, as far as I know, paying attention to the briefings, that the positive rate is going up. The death rate is going up. Now, I know a lot of that has to do with the availability of testing, because when you have more tests, you can test more people. So that data might not be, you know, accurate, because if they had the test, they would already be positive, you know, et cetera. So, but that's one thing. But dying is, you know, that's not something that you can, you know, if you're dead, you're dead. So the issue is the hospitals and the long-term care facilities and other businesses reporting the numbers. And not everybody reports the numbers right away, you know, in a timely fashion, or whenever the doctors and the health experts in the governor's office are putting together their data. So sometimes when they say, you know, 50 more deaths were reported in Indiana, that doesn't mean, you know, 50 people died last night. It could be 50 people died 2 weeks ago and we're just now getting the data. So that's also problematic too. So based on that information, you know, I'm not really sure, but I do know people are getting sick. I mean, you know, and so with Indiana, mainly central Indiana is the problem, because our state is, it's under 7 million people, and a big majority live in central Indiana. So Indianapolis, Marion County, Hendricks County. Why am I drawing blank on the counties? Hamilton County, Johnson County, Morgan County, I think is a county. I'm sorry. I know about my state, I promise. So basically, different counties surrounding Indianapolis are affected by this more, because there's more people. Now, the rest of Hoosiers are spread out in Indiana. So north and south, they have people, you know, a good number of people, but they're spread out. They're not like compacted in one county or one area like Indianapolis is. I think the city itself is about 800,000. That's not including the suburbs. So that's a lot of people, you know, just in one county. And so for that area, you're going to have more cases. You need more tests, more, you know, doctors and stuff like that. And some people around the state feel some type of way about it, because they're like, hey, you know, we're getting sick, we're dying too. Why are you guys focusing on central Indiana and Indianapolis so much? And while they should be paid attention to as well, they have to look at the data and see, holy crap, they have like a million plus people that live in the city and the suburban areas. You know, they're going to need a lot more stuff. But in the meantime, you know, what are we going to do? But I do feel like they should be helped too, because I could get how they feel like, you know, the state doesn't care about us. They just care about central Indiana and the large population. You know, if we die, we die. They don't seem to care about us. So I don't think that's true, but I could see why people would feel that way. So I do think that, you know, testing and all that should be focused on other parts of the state. But I think that they want to stabilize central Indiana. But at this point, what does that even mean? Like, how do you stabilize it? One thing, one of the president's briefings, they were talking about, it was the Surgeon General, Dr. Jerome Adams. He was talking about, you know, every day we're learning more and more about this virus. So we can't really figure out how to handle it, because we're still learning about it. like things are coming up and it's like, oh, this is part of it too. Okay, we're gonna handle this. And oh, this is part of it too. Okay, oh my gosh. Okay, what's next? So it's kind of like it's one of those things where you have to alter your plan because you don't know. So when it comes to, oh, I'm actually watching Fox News right now, and I saw that Tennessee, Missouri, and Montana are opening back up today. I think it was Missouri. They just flashed on the screen really quick. I didn't really get to read it that hard. So that's at least three states. What did I say? Tennessee, Montana, Missouri. I don't know. We're going to go with that. So there's three states that are opening up today. But anyway, so back to that. So we can't really identify what's going on with the virus because we're still learning about it. So regarding creating a vaccine or a cure or something like that, you have to adjust what you're doing. So it'd be different if we knew every single thing about this virus, you know, because there's even more symptoms and more things happening. I think I read somewhere that apparently, you know, they could cause blood clots or, you know, other things like that. I'm like, what? So we can't really move forward as a country or as a state if we don't know everything about this virus. I feel like that's dangerous. Again, it would be different if we knew about it. Okay, Texas, I'm watching it right now. Texas's stay-at-home order is going to expire on Thursday. I hope my family stays in the house. I have to talk to my grandma and my aunt, you know, older people who are at risk. So I need to talk to them, make sure they stay inside. But yeah, so we don't know everything about this virus, so we can't get back to normal or even open up. I just feel like it's a risk that I don't want to take. You know, other people don't care. They're like, hey, if other people die, it doesn't affect me. Even though I don't know how, like, it wouldn't if it's your family. But they're like, you know, other people die, that's on them. They should use personal responsibility, which is crazy because you can't use personal responsibility if you don't know what you're supposed to use. You know, you can't use 6 feet social distancing in a warehouse job or, you know, something like that, a crowded mall or something like that. So again, I think that it's problematic, and there's a lot of elderly people who have pre-existing medical conditions, and they're discovering that there's other illnesses or other things that might increase the risk of getting coronavirus. So it's like, for instance, my mom, she has pre-existing, you know, medical conditions, and I'm like, you know, there's no way I would let her go to work. I think you saw the memes on Facebook or on Twitter about how the millennials are the ones telling their parents to stay inside, telling their baby boomer parents to stay inside, you know, that kind of thing. So I would be the one to tell her to stay inside. But for her, she's a teacher, and schools in Indiana are closed physically until the end of school. So if we did go back to normal, she wouldn't have to go to work because, again, the governor signed that executive order a while back. So, and he wouldn't change it. Somebody asked and he said, no, I'm not going to change it. So if we did open back up, she wouldn't have to physically leave the house. So I wouldn't be, that worried about her, but I am worried about her. And she came over the other day. It was kind of funny because, since I don't have a job, I didn't really drive anyway, because there's no need for me to drive. There's nowhere to go. You know, grocery stores around the corner, everything is around the corner from me. It's like within a 2-3 mile radius. So I haven't been driving because I got my groceries. I got the Walmart grocery pickup. And so what I should have been doing was at least starting my car up to, you know, make sure things are running right. And because I don't always focus on the weather, like the temperature, I don't really pay attention to, you know, hey, it's 10 degrees tonight, you should probably start your car up just to make sure it runs. And basically what I've been doing is I order stuff off Amazon and I end up driving my car because there is an Amazon hub locker. So that's kind of like when I drive my car. So last week I tried to start my car and it didn't start. And I'm like, oh my gosh. Now my stepdad, his job, they keep changing hours because of the coronavirus stuff. So he has to be there at like 4 or 5 o'clock, gets off at like 2 or so. So I called him and I'm like, my car won't start. And he's like, I'll be there, you know, be there in a minute. And because they live about 5 minutes away on a good day. So I didn't know he was bringing my mom, which is great. So he brought her, and you know, we got out and we hugged, because I haven't seen her in, wow, it's been over a month since I've seen my own mom. So we hugged and everything, and we're like, oh no, social distancing. And she's like, well, if I die, at least I died hugging my daughter, you know, being funny. So he jumped my car and he was like, your battery is at 27%. What have you been doing? And I was like, nothing. And they're like, you should have started your car. It was frost. It was a frost advisory. I was like, really? So I'm like, oops, I should be doing it. So he was like, the rest of this week is fine. You don't have to start it. So today I got a package from Amazon and I'm like, okay, I hope my car starts. I have a remote starter. So I started from the house and it beeped up green. It beeped and turned green. So, okay, good. It works. So I went ahead and, you know, that was me starting up my car. And that was also me getting off topic. Oh, sorry, listeners. But okay, anyway, back to my topics that I had. So let's see, I talked about 1, 2, 3. Oh, so another thing, this has nothing to do with the governor. I think that I talked about all the stuff that I wanted to about the governor and his briefing today. Yeah, this next part is just about, you know, what's going on in my life personally. So you guys know, again, I talk about this every episode, that I am in an accelerated PhD program. So again, classes are 8 weeks long. I'm stuffing in 15 weeks in 8 weeks. It's tough. So this class I'm in, it ends in 2 weeks, and our final project is a 20-page research paper. And I'm like, okay, I thought it was going to be kind of hard at first, but because the question is open-ended, but I know that she'll give us more detail. So this past week, well, I guess Sunday, steps through Sunday night, I submitted a paper, and when I typed it up and looked at it, it was actually 15 pages. So I was like, okay, well, you know, because she gave us more directives, more questions, you know, bullet points to answer, because I can write like I talk, just ramble on about foolishness, just nonsense. I can just, you know, I need you to tell me what you want me to write, because if not, it's just gonna be me just talking about, you know, just whatever, just, you know, on and on. So I'm waiting for her to give us those guidelines for this week coming up. What to do is our discussion board that is 1,000 words, so roughly 3 pages. That's what's due this week. And so we already have our guidelines for that. So I'm like, okay, I'm good on that. So when the class ends in 2 weeks, my next class starts the next week. So the class ends Friday night, which kind of sucks because I don't have until Sunday night to get that paper done. But the class ends on Friday night, and then my next one will start Monday. Now, before my last class ended, and I had, 10 days before the one that I have now started? So I had a good, you know, good few days of a break. So this time around, I don't. So I'm hoping that the class, at least the first week of it, isn't like intense in your face. You know, I'm like, I need a break, just a couple days, just to, you know, chill out, not worry about anything, but we'll see how that works. And so that class will be, again, 8 weeks, and that is considered a summer class, because I don't work and I'm relying on student loans for an income. I had to take a class, because if I don't take a class, I don't get the money, because I'm not in school. And so I took a class because with the PhD program, if you do 6 hours, that's considered full time. So part time, you still get the funding, but it's less. So I went ahead and did one class, and the part time funding it's still enough for me to, you know, live. So I'm like, well, if I didn't need this money, I wouldn't be taking a class during the summer. So I do. So I'm gonna, you know, take the class. So I'm excited about that one. And then depending on, I guess, the amount of money I have left over, you know, how many classes I'll take in the fall semester. And I was looking at my course guideline. Why can't I remember the words? The thing that tells you what the classes are you have to take. The completion plan. Okay. I was looking at that, and basically I only have like a handful of classes before I have to declare or propose, I guess is the better word, propose my dissertation topic. And I'm kind of freaking out because I'm not ready. Like, I know what I want to talk about. I've talked about how I'm very involved and education is something near and dear to my heart. So I want to talk about education reform. And because again, my degree is going to be in public policy with a focus on social policy. Regarding social policy, I want to focus on education policy and education reform. But the thing with that is I don't know how to narrow it down enough, or like a one question to be able to be like, this is what I'm going to write my book over. There's so many different things going on that I don't know how to narrow it down. And I'm kind of freaking out because the time to narrow it down is coming up. So my listeners out there, if you have an idea, I would love it. If you had an idea and you say, hey, AK, this is what you should do. I know you want to talk about education reform, but this should be your sentence, or this should be your question you want to answer, or whatever. I would greatly appreciate that. And I would give you a shout out. And I mean, heck, I would like give you money or something because you would have helped me get my life together, you know, Cash App or whatever. So that could be an incentive for someone to help me out. You know, you can DM me Twitter AK17033, you know, give me an idea and I'll Cash App you or something. Actually, I probably shouldn't say that. I don't know if I'm even allowed to do that. Okay, never mind. Let's forget about that, because yeah, I probably shouldn't say that. I'm not trying to pay somebody to do it for me. So yeah, never mind. Scratch that. It sounded good. Okay, so the next topic, another thing is, you guys know that I am working on a political campaign for state Senate. The senator is, what district am I in? District 24 in Indiana. If you're from Indiana, I don't know if that actually means something to you or not. So he's, you know, we're working on his campaign. And because of the social distancing guidelines, we're limited. You know, basically when the governor shut down schools March 13th, and our campaign staff was supposed to go door to door on March 14th, so which was a Saturday. And so, you know, of course, he hadn't shut the state down yet or whatever, but we're kind of like, schools are closed. You know, the area where I live, actually, we found out that those schools closed before everybody else, because apparently there was a kid that had coronavirus in the school district where I live. So they closed the schools down and they do e-learning. And they found out it was from their parent that came back from a conference in New York or Boston or somewhere, and they brought it back. So we were kind of like, you know, we're not gonna do this. But also I was looking at the weather and I was like, guys, it's supposed to rain the whole day. So again, we didn't do it, which is great, because I hate just interacting, you know, in person, and I hate it. I don't like it. I'm more of a, obviously more of a online podcast type of person, but I'll do it if I need to. Like, I was going to do it. I definitely was going to do it. You know, it's for the greater good. It's not about me. It's about, you know, I believe in his ideologies and I want him to win. So I would do, you know, whatever it takes to win, even if it's outside my comfort zone. And so because we're socially distanced, we talked about doing a phone bank. And the person that's in charge of that, you know, sent out an email and she's like, who's interested? And I'm like, I hate talking on the phone, but I'm going to be interested and I'm going to do it again for the greater good. So today I actually called two people. One number was disconnected, and then one number, the person didn't answer. And so I went back and read her email again. And then I saw that she had been calling people too. And she said, you know, I've been calling people and I noticed that a lot of numbers are disconnected or they're wrong numbers or people aren't answering. And she said, so is anybody interested in text banking? You know, would you feel comfortable doing that from your own phone? You know, let me know, which is good because I hate talking on the phone. And I'm like, well, yeah, we use the Google Voice app. I was like, I'm totally interested. Let me know, you know, give me the information. I need to log on and, you know, do my texting, the text bank stuff. Because I thought about the phones and I thought about, because of what's going on, there might be some people who have like disconnected their phones, or you know, let the house phone, the landline, just kind of go by the wayside because to save money. And I didn't say that to her. I probably should have, but I think she figured that out. You know, people aren't, you know, they're not using their house phones or whatever because, you know, trying to save money because those bills can be expensive. And some people don't even have house phones, like myself. I've never had a house phone, being on my own. And then with the people not answering, you know, for me, I don't answer numbers I don't know. So with the Google Voice app, I think it has your number, like your real number, like when you call, show up as a out-of-state number, I think. I don't know, but I don't answer numbers I don't know personally. So I can imagine, you know, somebody sitting there looking at their phone ring and they see like a 312 area code and they're like, what is that? What, who? And they don't answer it. And, you know, we're not going to leave messages because I'm not going to say, call me back at, you know, my regular number. So, you know, so those two people that I contacted, you know, didn't go through. So I think I'm just going to wait for the information and the instructions on the text bank. Again, I will, you know, be outside my comfort zone and I'll call if, you know, that's what I have to do to campaign. So also, you know, that it's almost May. It's May 1st, Friday. I should get my life together. So for me, I've been talking about how I'm going to run for school board. And I think I have to have the paperwork filled out by June 30th. I need to check because it might be sooner, or I mean, the election's in November, so it couldn't be, I guess it could be later, perhaps. But I need to get that filled out because I need to get my name on the ballot so I could, you know, have a shot at winning and being on the school board. So I need to do that. And then regarding the state, you know, depending on what the governor says on Friday, again, he does 2 weeks at a time, so June 30th wouldn't be in the cards in his, you know, explanation of the stay-at-home order, lifting it or, you know, extending it. But I mean, when it comes to campaigning, you know, I hate the idea of going door to door, but I was kind of thinking more of, you know, electronic, you know, online anyway, kind of create a website or create a Facebook page, you know, Twitter, just to kind of, you know, have people inbox me, answer me questions, kind of ask me questions and, you know, kind of put my name out there, that type of thing. Maybe even create some podcasts or some videos, I don't know, something like that, to get my name out there. Because regarding, and even if the state was to open back up, I know I wouldn't, but some people probably also wouldn't, you know, open their door and talk to a complete stranger. Like, it's, you know, it's like, hey, I know the state opened back up, but, you know, opens back up, but coronavirus is still a thing, so, you know, I'm going to talk to you through my glass door or something like that. It's just, hey, open the door. I can't talk to you. You know, can we talk, you know, talk to the screen door or something like that? So that might also be a hindrance as well. Our primary is pushed back. It was supposed to be May 5th, I think. May 2nd, May 5th, one of the days. It's been pushed back to June 2nd, I think. So it's been pushed back. And with the school board, I'm not going to be on the primary ballot because there's, you know, nobody running. You don't have to run against someone to be chosen and then you run again in November. For the school board, I think there are 3 spots opening up. So it would just be, you know, 3 people putting their name on the ballot and then choosing from those 3 people and, you know, they win or whatever happens. So it's not as intense as, you know, running for political office. It's just kind of, you know, here's my name, here's what I'm about, here's my qualifications, here's what I care about, vote for me, you know, that type of thing. So that's what I'm gonna do. So I have to figure out when I'm gonna do it. I need to contact the school board, the current, you know, school board now, the superintendent, you know, the people at the town hall, and, you know, just everybody to figure out what I need to do in that regard. So actually, that was all of my bullet point topics. So I am going to go ahead and I will sign off. Apparently, the coronavirus task force is meeting. It says meeting soon. So if you listen to this before, like listen to this right away or whatever, apparently they are meeting. So it's coming on. So sorry, that was a Fox News alert that just popped up on TV. Okay, so again, so I am finished with everything that I wanted to talk about. So I will talk to you guys next time. Again, Twitter AK17033. Thank you. See you next time.